Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. Today, we're going way back to ancient Israel, and we're going to be talking about a really interesting transition of power and faith that takes place between two pretty prominent figures, Eli, the aging high priest, and the young Samuel.
Yeah, it's a time when it feels like the word of the Lord was just so rare. It's almost like you can feel the anticipation in the air that something big is about to happen, like a spiritual shift of some kind. And Dr. Chisholm, in his analysis of 1 Samuel chapters 3 and 4, he really kind of gives us a framework to view these events through.
So set the stage for us. What's going on as we kind of enter into this narrative?
Well, just imagine for a second a nation that's grown accustomed to the silence from God. Visions are scarce prophetic words, you almost never hear them. And the spiritual heart of Israel is kind of flickering instead of burning brightly. And Eli, who's the high priest, he kind of embodies this decline. I mean, his eyesight is failing. And Dr. Chisholm suggests that this failing eyesight, it kind of symbolizes a deeper spiritual blindness that is affecting the whole nation.
And it's not just Eli, though, right? His sons, Hophni and Phinehas, they're not really helping the situation, are they?
No, not at all. In fact, they're making things way worse. They're not just neglecting their duties, but they're actively profaning the sanctuary. They're engaging in corrupt practices that completely violate God's laws. And Dr. Chisholm argues that their actions are really a symptom of a much deeper moral decay. That's really permeated Israelite society as a whole. It's a stark contrast to the young Samuel, who we find serving faithfully in all of this dysfunction.
Which makes Samuel's call narrative even more striking, right? So it's the middle of the night, the lamp of God, and that's this oil lamp that symbolizes God's presence in the tabernacle. It's still burning. And Samuel hears this voice calling his name.
Yeah, this is a pivotal scene because it marks a turning point. Remember we were saying how the word of the Lord was so rare? It was like direct communication with God had almost become a distant memory. So when Samuel hears his voice, he thinks at first that it's Eli calling him.
And it happens not just once.
Right.
Not just twice, but three times. You can really feel this tension building as the story unfolds.
Right. And finally, Eli realizes that it's actually God who is calling Samuel.
I find it so interesting that Eli, despite all of his failings and shortcomings, he's still able to recognize the significance of this moment.
He is. And he tells Samuel how he should respond. He says, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." It's like a lesson in how to truly actively listen to God's voice, even when it comes in unexpected ways. And I'll tell you, the message that Samuel receives is pretty chilling.
God reveals that judgment is coming upon Eli's family, and it's a direct result of their wickedness.
And it's not just some random act of punishment either. Dr. Chisholm points out that this judgment that Samuel hears, it actually echoes the pronouncements that were given earlier in the book by this unnamed man of God. So it's a consistent message. It's like a warning that has been repeatedly ignored, and now God's patience has finally run out.
So we have this parallel prophecy. It's underlining just how serious this situation is. And then, as if things weren't tense enough already, war breaks out between Israel and the Philistines. And maybe not so surprisingly, Israel suffers a defeat. But what's really perplexing, I think, is their response to this defeat.
You're right. I mean, instead of turning to God for guidance, instead of repenting of their sins, instead of even examining their own hearts, they make this really strange decision. They decide to bring the Ark of the Covenant into battle with them.
Now, for those who might not be as familiar with this story, the Ark of the Covenant was the sacred chest. It held the tablets of the Ten Commandments. It was this powerful symbol of God's presence among the Israelites. But it seems like in this situation, they're treating the Ark as something more than just a symbol.
Yeah, they are. And that's exactly the problem. They're approaching the Ark like it's some kind of magical charm, like a divine weapon that's going to guarantee their victory.
Yeah.
And Dr. Chisholm, he argues that this is a classic example of idolatry, you know, where people misplace their faith in an object instead of in the one true God.
And it's not just the Israelites who fall into this trap, is it? I mean, the Philistines, when they hear that the Ark is coming, they're filled with fear, like the Ark itself is God.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Both sides have completely missed the point. They're so focused on the physical Ark that they've lost sight of the true source of power and authority, you know, the God who the Ark represents. And unfortunately, this misunderstanding is going to have some pretty serious consequences.
And speaking of consequences, there's this one character in this scene that I find so fascinating, Eli. He's back in Shiloh, sitting by the roadside as the Ark is being carried off to battle. What do you make of this? His inaction.
Well, Dr. Chisholm, he suggests that Eli's passivity in this moment, it's a reflection of his failure to discipline his sons. And it's almost like his concern for the Ark, which it might be genuine. It's totally overshadowed by his inability or unwillingness to take responsibility for the spiritual state of the nation. You know, the fact that things have gotten so bad under his leadership.
That's a sobering thought, isn't it? That even someone in a position of religious authority can be so blind to what's really going on. And if I'm reading the signs correctly, it seems like things are about to get a whole lot worse for Eli and for all of Israel. It's like one of those situations where you can't look away. You've got the Israelites marching off to battle, thinking that the ark is their ticket to victory. And we know from the prophecy that Eli's sons, who are right there in the thick of it, they're heading straight for judgment.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is where the story gets really interesting, I think, because it forces us to think about God's power in a whole new way.
Yeah.
I mean, can God be manipulated? Can you control God by using a physical object? Even an object as sacred as the ark.
Yeah, you know, it's tempting to think that if we just go through the right motions or we have the right symbols or whatever, then we can somehow force God's hand, make God do what we want. But that's not really how it works, does it?
Not at all.
Yeah.
And Demarcus makes this really interesting point. He says that the capture of the ark, it's a terrible thing for the Israelites, obviously. But it also shows us that God can't be contained or controlled.
Mm.
God's power is bigger than any physical object or any specific location.
Right. It reminds me of that verse in Psalms. You know, where it says, if I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. It's like there's no escaping God's presence, no matter where you go or what you do.
Exactly. And for those who are not aligned with God's will, that presence can be a pretty uncomfortable thing, even judgment. But anyway, back to the battlefield. We've got the Philistines who were terrified at first when they heard the ark was coming. They start to rally each other. They're like, be men, you know, like. Don't be afraid of their God.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? Like, their whole idea of being brave, it comes down to defying a God they don't even understand. So what happens next? Does the ark do its magic? Mm-hmm. Does it protect the Israelites?
Nope. Actually, it's the opposite. The Philistines completely crush the Israelites in battle. Israel suffers heavy losses. And just as the prophecy foretold, Eli's sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are killed.
Oh, man. I can only imagine the feeling of despair in the Israelite camp. But what about Eli? Back in Shiloh, he's waiting for news. It's just heartbreaking to picture this old man, blind and frail, clinging to hope while everything falls apart.
Yeah, it's a powerful image. And Dr. Chisholm says that Eli's physical blindness, it reflects the spiritual blindness that led to this whole tragedy. He can hear the commotion in the city, but he doesn't really know what's going on. Then this messenger arrives. His clothes are torn. There's dust on his head. You know, all the classic signs of defeat and mourning.
It's a harsh reminder that actions have consequences. And those consequences can affect a lot of people, not just the person who made the mistake.
And the news that this messenger brings is the worst possible news. Eli finds out that both of his sons are dead. The army has been defeated. And worst of all, the Ark of the Covenant has been captured by the Philistines.
Wow. It's like the weight of all his failures, the weight of all the warnings that he ignored. It just crushes him. Eli falls backward from his chair and he dies.
And the irony of it all, as Dr. Chisholm points out, is that Eli dies worrying about the ark. The very thing that he failed to protect because he didn't discipline his sons. His concern for the ark might be real, but it also rings hollow.
It's just so tragic, but the story isn't over yet, is it? What about Eli's daughter-in-law? She's pregnant, about to give birth, and she has no idea what's happened to her family.
Oh, man. Her story is just so sad. It really shows how sin and the consequences of sin can ripple outward and hurt people who seem innocent. You know, she hears about the defeat, the deaths of her husband and her father-in-law, and then the capture of the ark. It's all too much for her to handle.
You know, it's like this gut-wrenching contrast to Hannah's story from earlier in the book. Remember, Hannah was filled with joy when she gave birth to Samuel. It was a sign of God's faithfulness and hope for the future of Israel.
Right. And now here's Eli's daughter-in-law. She's overcome with grief and despair, and she ends up dying in childbirth. The name that she gives to her son is Ichabod, which means, where is the glory?
That name is like this cry of anguish. It reflects the emptiness that's fallen over Israel. It's the complete opposite of the hope and promise that we saw with Samuel's birth. It really feels like the story's hit rock bottom. Man, it's hard to imagine a more depressing ending to a chapter. The ark, you know, the symbol of God's presence among the Israelites, captured by the enemy, Eli and his sons dead, and this newborn baby, Ichabod, named after the absence of God's glory. It feels like it's all over for Israel.
Yeah, it's definitely a low point for them.
Yeah.
But even in this moment of defeat, even in captivity, God is still working behind the scenes. The fact that the ark was captured, it doesn't diminish God's power. In fact, I think it actually sets the stage for some pretty amazing events that we're going to see in the next few chapters.
You know, it's easy to forget that, isn't it? We tend to think that if God is present, then everything should be going well and everyone should be happy. But sometimes God shows up in ways that we don't expect. Sometimes God shakes things up. You know, maybe even lets things fall apart so that something new can be built.
Right. And Dr. Chisholm talks about how the Philistines, they're celebrating their victory over Israel. But they're going to learn pretty quickly that having the ark isn't such a great thing. It's more like a curse than a blessing.
Yeah.
They'll be practically begging to get rid of it.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. You know, it makes me think, if God can't be contained or controlled by a physical object like the ark, then how does God's presence actually show up in our lives? Where do we encounter the divine even when things are chaotic and we're not sure what's going to happen next?
That's the big question, isn't it? And I don't know if we can ever fully answer it. But I think this story can give us some clues. We see that God can be a source of comfort, but also judgment. God can bless us, but also challenge us. I think it all comes down to the state of our hearts. You know, are we willing to align ourselves with God's will?
So speaking of alignment, I'm kind of curious about Samuel. He's been pretty quiet lately. What happens to him?
Well, Samuel wasn't involved in this particular battle. But remember, earlier in the book, he had that prophetic calling. And that really set the stage for everything that's going to happen next. Dr. Chisholm actually points out that Samuel will become a really important leader in chapter 7. He'll help lead the Israelites in a spiritual revival. And eventually, they'll even defeat the Philistines.
So it's kind of like this arc, right? We have the fall of Eli and his family, the capture of the ark. And then we have the rise of Samuel and the restoration of Israel. It shows us that even when religious leaders make mistakes, even when people fail, God is still in control. God's plans can't be stopped.
That's right. And it makes you think about what happens when the old way of doing things collapses. You know, who steps up to fill the void? In this case, it was Samuel. He was chosen by God for this specific purpose. And it makes me wonder if maybe God is preparing people right now, you know, to lead us through times of crisis and uncertainty in the future.
So if we were to boil everything down to one main takeaway from this deep dive, it would be that God is always at work, even when things look hopeless. Yeah, judgment might be necessary sometimes, but it's never the end of the story. Renewal and restoration are always possible, especially when people turn back to God with humility and repentance.
Yeah, that's a great summary. And I think it leaves us with this one final thought. How do we make space for God's presence in our own lives? Even when things are tough, even when we feel like we've messed up, how do we learn to listen to that still small voice like Samuel did? You know, the voice that can change everything.
It's definitely a challenge, but it's a challenge worth taking.
Yeah.
And I want to encourage all of you listening to keep digging into this story. Keep asking questions and keep listening for that voice. Until next time, keep seeking, keep wondering, and keep the conversation going.